think about the new normal we live in. And also then think about all the boundaries that we've had for years that have been shattered while we stuck within the boundaries of our own homes. And these boundaries are things which we always had in our grasp. You know, it's all the tools we had to be able to, you know, work remotely, to be able to collaborate from different places. All these things which we said, you know, the technology is great. It's amazing. I mean, I'm sure the time will come, but we need to be physically present for this. But do we anymore? Do we really believe that after all this is over, that we won't keep a lot of these things and continue using them? And on the other end, will we continue to create the way we're creating right now, right? Because so many things we've learned about how to innovate remotely, which you might actually be able to use as we go forward. And on the other side, the question also is, will we be able to create things like we always did, or will we suddenly look at it from a very different purpose, from a very different value, you know, proposition of sorts? And while all these thoughts were going on in my head, I happened to have a conversation with someone on LinkedIn the other day. And he and I kind of shared this point of view, and he and I had this conversation for a bit, and he said, this would be a great episode of a podcast. And this person was Jay Mandel, the founder of The Collective NYC. And I thought it'd be great to kind of get him on the podcast and talk about this from a wider lens, right? Talk about it from a global lens, talk about it from, like, not just an Indian sense, because in that way, the one of the boundaries that has been shattered is that, you know, that these country divides and these place divides that you had are relevant in the way we function. And so, yeah, and so that's what we want to do in this episode of Advertising is Dead. Talk about advertising, marketing, and content in the world of Corona and post the Corona phase in life. And I'm Varun Dugirala, co-founder and content chief for The Glitch. And we'll be right back with this, or rather, we'll be right back with advertising in the time of a pandemic. So, you know, we live in this world right now where things like advertising, marketing, and content have very different perspectives. I've got a very interesting LinkedIn conversation or other message from Jay, and I thought this will be an interesting way to kind of widen the scope of what we talk about on this podcast. So, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And I know that I've had some technical difficulties in doing this, and I'm right now, as a random beep sound comes in, I'm trying to record this in my in a room which has closets. But I'm guessing the content will be good enough that people won't really mind any glitches in the sound. So let's start off by just so that people kind of get your background and what's gotten you to this point right now in life. I thought it'd be great for you to kind of start off with that.
Sure. I have historically been a corporate guy. I've worked in global digital marketing for large companies, including MasterCard. I've worked in the marketing capacity at IBM. And recently, about 2 years ago, I started my own firm called The Collective NYC, which was based on the premise that we're better together than we are apart. And I brought together a lot of friends and partners from the industry to help to solve some complicated problems in corporate America and across the marketing landscape. It turns out that the economy has been leading us to this place where we could do all the things that everyone seems to be doing during the coronavirus. And that was the premise. Yeah. Bring together the best people for a project with low infrastructure and low cost, yeah, and really try and solve it in a creative way. Another thing to say is that a lot of the people that I work with are have more experience than some people you may get in traditional capacities. A lot of us have worked for about 20 years.
You know, when you say one interesting thing which you just said, right? I think that's a great point to start with, is the fact that we couldn't have survived the way we are surviving, let's say even a decade before. I think that would have been impossible to get anything moving, anything working. Forget content creation. I don't even know how we would, like, just kind of pass the day.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting thought. And One of my friends said that this pandemic is amplifying stupid. There are a lot of stupid decisions that have been made that really don't align with a customer and the customer's value. And those decisions are not going to pass the test today going forward. And what I'm saying is, to bridge it to your question, is that you don't need high production value to be relevant and timely and have empathy in this situation. All you need is a Zoom. And yeah, we're on it right now. We're talking, I don't even know how, it's night for you, it's morning for me. And I'm sitting here and we're delivering value because we're talking about a timely and relevant topic and we're in touch with our reality. And whether it be Zoom or FaceTime or WhatsApp or any of these other features and functionality, I'm beginning to question what it will look like if we, when we emerge. Will more people be working from home? Will it be more socially acceptable? What will these engagement techniques be going forward?
Yeah, this is the whole point, right? Is the fact that I'm finding it more, and I think I bought into it a long time ago, but I see the value in it a lot more now, is the fact that you could have people sitting in multiple offices, multiple cities, in multiple countries, and still making a project happen, and still figuring a way to kind of collaborate and kind of come up with how we can kind of sustain and do. In a more comfortable scenario, you would still go out, you would still do all the stuff that you did, but you could just, I think I was listening to another podcast the other day and I realized something which one of them said, which is the fact that you could live anywhere in the world where the real estate was cheaper, or where maybe the schools are better, or just like generally the way of living was better, and could still do what you do.
That's true. And there's these themes, especially for the younger generations, of this digital nomads, where you go to like an Airbnb type place and you could just do your work from anywhere. Which is totally cool. And I think that generation totally embraces it. I think it becomes a lot harder when you have roots and family and other details. But yeah, I totally buy into that. And I'll tell you, when I worked at MasterCard, I did some traveling, but a lot of the relationships that I built were over web meetings and phone calls on a regular basis. And it's totally, we totally got results and built strong relationships while doing it.
How have you seen the industry change in the States right now, especially the whole marketing and content side of things?
Yeah, I became obsessed with monitoring responses to the coronavirus. And what I noticed is that people, companies are sending out messages that are tone deaf.
Yeah.
Some companies are doing some great things, but other companies are sending out messages that could be received from anyone. Like, for example, wash your hands. I received a message from a dermatologist that I went to about 3 years ago. The dermatologist told me about all the measures that they're taking to clean their office and make things better for their patients. And I was thinking to myself, well, I really don't care. And by the way, like, in the middle of a pandemic, I'm not going to check for my yearly skin checkup. I didn't even do it this year. But the point is that, like, when you deliver a message and the message is more about how your business is going to make it through the crisis, the customer is going to see right through it. And so when I study what companies are doing, I notice companies like Nike. Mm. And Nike says that if you have a body, you're an athlete.
Yeah.
And they have these clever messages that they had released by their athlete ambassadors. And those messages basically encourage people to work out inside through this time. Yeah. And I thought to myself, wow, how brilliant is that? Because you're sending a message, it's resonating with people. And I bet Nike's donating money and doing all those things, but people are sharing and caring about that message. And the measure of success for me in content is engagement.
Yeah.
When people like what you have to say.
Yeah.
They're going to engage and they're going to share. And I noticed that people were like, it was just like sprouting with Nike.
Yeah.
And so what I'm noticing also is that there are all these companies that came into the crisis with very little differentiation in what they do. Mm. And what they're resorting to in the crisis is, I'm going to make a donation, or I'm going to be good to my employees, or I'm going to do this or do that. Those are all good things. I want to encourage those things.
Yeah.
But from a brand and marketing perspective, they're not going to make a difference after the campaign. Because what's going to happen is people are going to be like, which company was that donated the $600,000?
Yeah.
You know, and they're not going to remember.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
And I think also, what generally happens is, and this is where I think agencies become really important, right? Or whoever the partners for the brands are, to turn around and say, don't look at it as an opportunity to say something and kind of wait and say, like we had this conversation internally at Glitch, and we were like, what are the ways? And we said, either the brand has a reason to say something right now. Like if you're a brand that is, let's say, a hand sanitizer, you have a lot of things you should be saying because you're pretty much part of the solution. But if you're a brand which has nothing to do with it, can you add value in some other way? Right? Like people need to be entertained. They need to get home. So can you figure find a decent way to entertain people. But don't seem opportunistic. Once people remember when you're opportunistic. I think, like you said, people might not remember who donated, but they remember the people who tried to be opportunistic during this time.
Yeah, that's true. And I have a lot of sort of methodologies for thinking about this. And one of the ways that I think about it is what I call the simple marketing promise. And the simple marketing promise is a very simple statement that you can ask yourself. This comes from Seth Godin, like the god of marketing.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about here is three questions, and I'm going to pull them up because I use this all the time, but I want to make sure that I get it perfectly right. The first question is, my product is for people who believe blank. The second question is, I will focus on people who want blank. And the third question is, I promise that engaging with what I make will help you get blank.
Mm.
And so that is very, very important because if you put the lens of the times we're in and you start to think, okay, what is the thing that I'm producing and how is it going to add value in this time?
Yeah.
It will really force you to come up with something that's timely and relevant.
Yeah. I think it's also what's important is to kind of look at this from a cultural context, right? You're saying culturally, do you want to turn, you sometimes, and that's where it becomes a more global thing, right? So what you might be able to do in some countries, you might not be able to do in others. Like I saw this, did you see the song that the guys in South Korea made? So there's a song in South Korea, which the government made, which is something which became popular on TikTok. And which is basically about how to wash your hands. So the whole song was choreographed for all the moves.
I heard something like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And
that's great, right? You know your audience. You know they're consistently on that. You figured a way to give that message. That's a very interesting way to do. But that might not work in, let's say, I don't know, pick any other country. I find very few countries where that might actually work.
Well, the other thing that we're seeing a lot of is that companies are giving a lot of things away. And I think that's a great opportunity to build your brand, to show people. So let's talk about Zoom. We're on Zoom. The reason why we're on Zoom is because it works better than any other webinar tool.
Yeah.
Zoom is known as the company that people were talking about because it just worked better in corporate circles. But now my children are on Zoom. And why are my children on Zoom? They're on Zoom because the CEO of Zoom made a very strategic decision to offer Zoom to everyone in schools.
Yeah.
And now a whole new generation is learning about Zoom. And guess what? It's very much aligned with what they stand for. So they are democratizing the way we communicate with each other. It's in their values. It's in their vision. And that's memorable. Yeah. There are other stories that I've heard too. There was a story about Ryan Reynolds who has Aviation Gin. Yeah. And they've always been doing creative stuff. Like, for example, on the leap year in the United States, February 29th. I don't know if that's a worldwide thing. But leap year, you know, if you're born on that day, it only happens every 4 years.
Yeah.
So had this older lady who turned 21, really was 80-something or whatever. They always take these clever opportunities to take a spin on something and get attention. And just yesterday, I read that their company is donating 30% of their profits to bartenders that are out of work. That's memorable.
Exactly. That's, right. I think what we're both kind of saying, and I think that's one of the most resounding things, right, is that if it feels genuine, then it's great. If it feels like, oh, you're just doing this because you want to put something out there and people might remember you, then it's never going to work. So one of our clients, Diageo, right? So Diageo in India has actually started manufacturing hand sanitizers in their factories. Yes. I think that's phenomenal because that's something they could actually do. It was not their product. And the fact that they've actually gone ahead and done that, it shows the fact that, you know, they're willing to add something there. And so there are multiple examples of companies who are doing the right things. We're not an overtly political show, but I would say I have different points of view on multiple governments. But I think genuinely everyone's kind of coming together in saying, okay, fine, this is something which is global. And we all need to do this the right way, or just stay away, right? I think a lot of them are just saying, let's just stick to the...
Yeah. And I think it comes down to a matrix. The matrix, has four axes. On the top, we're talking about awareness to purchase. Mm-hmm. And going down, we're talking about emotional to rational. Yeah. And the four quadrants are entertain, inspire, educate, and convince.
Okay.
And I think that I think that entertainment is good as long as you have empathy. I think that it's good to inspire people at this point in time and sort of say, okay, listen, during this point of time, if I work in this industry, there are certain things that people will need.
Yeah.
Educate is really good. But if you start to think about sort of the long tail here and... Yeah. The long tail is that eventually people will come out of this crisis and want to buy products and services. That's when you start to, deliver with a call to action and like how to buy. But like, I think that marketing is especially important right now to just help get people, like people aren't looking to brands to solve all their problems.
Yeah.
Like there was a funny tweet that I saw where the guy said that, he got a message from Lululemon saying, we're all in this together. And it all of a sudden made him better, which is, that's not, that doesn't make sense. All these messages, it's like, okay, people have heard enough. There have been enough articles in the newspaper saying that people have heard enough of that stuff. So it's incumbent on you to sort of take a step back and figure out how you're going to add value, what you're going to do, and how it relates to the service that you offer, and get get to that place. And so, value is the measure. Value is the measure, and the long game is where you're going to start to see success because people will remember. One of my clients is a professional recruiting firm, and I'm going to recommend to them that they do free coaching. Now, I don't know if they'll take that recommendation, but imagine if you handpick people that are potential customers or existing customers and say to them, hey, I've been working in recruiting for years and years and I have some time right now and I'm there for you. Let's talk about what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do it. People will remember that.
Yeah. You know, what's on the other side, I think what's also, let's take away the fact, the part where what can you do for them in directly, right? It's kind of your product kind of fits into it. If you don't fit into that, what can you as a brand do is also an interesting question, right? I mean, So which is why when people say you need to entertain people, one of the most interesting things I've seen has been any kind of workout brand, any kind of sports brand, they're all turning out and creating these do-at-home workout pieces. Right? They're all finding different ways to engage. And I think we're reading a little too much of that, but I'm enjoying it because I've been trying to find one to do at home.
Well, there are plenty of free things that you can try now that you would have never been able to try. But I'll tell you something. I do Bikram yoga. And Bikram yoga is not something we should be doing right now. The studio is closed. And so now all the teachers are independently going off and saying, I'm going to do Zoom Bikram yoga. And I have to do that tonight because I haven't exercised in about a week. And so I want to do Bikram yoga, but then I'm getting these messages that's saying that it's not working. Like people like that, if you're going to do this, like we talked about production value, but like you can't have a computer that's on the floor angled up like this and like get all that stuff. So companies like Peloton who have thought through the user experience and really have a systematic way of delivering this are better suited. And that goes to another area of what I'm focusing on as a company. I work collective. One of the member companies of the collective is called UX Bureau. Mm-hmm. And we think about user experience from end to end.
Yeah.
And what happens at home, which is off the screen, is as much as a part of the user experience as anything. So if you think about, oh my God, I'm doing yoga, but I'm going to bump into my kitchen table. And I need it to be hot, but it's not hot. And I can't see the instructor or hear the instructor. These are things that will have to be worked out. The other thing is like schooling. Like think about all the things that are happening with schooling. My children are on Google Classroom right now and using it. And my girlfriend is an assistant principal. And she's been experiencing, and I've been experiencing, just how complicated it is for people that aren't as technically savvy to embrace and understand the things that you and I have been understanding for years. But
there's my question. How are your kids finding it? Because I think that's the most interesting part.
They're in the age of where they get it. So it's pretty easy for them. My son has a morning meeting with his teacher and he's participating. And my son, I was so proud of him. The other day he initiated a virtual play date and it was on Zoom and 20 people joined. And he was figuring out how to mute certain people at certain times, and he was figuring out how to raise hands.
Yeah.
And so that came naturally to him, but different generations are not going to realize that. So one of the things that I thought about, and I just posted on LinkedIn about this the other day, is that back in 2010, Jeremiah Owang from the Altimeter Group at the time, a leading analyst, came up with this hub and spoke model. And we've talked about that for years in social media. But what I'm seeing is that when I was at MasterCard, we had this global digital team. And the global digital team was about selecting platforms and coming up with governance and coming up with rules and helping the people around the world to embrace these new ideas and technologies. What happened was that we played a very critical role. And what I'm noticing now is that a lot of people that are on the front lines are also selecting their platforms. They're also setting up sort of their, and it's sort of a free-for-all. So I think when we come out of this, if we come out of it and we start to say, okay, good experiment, this was great. I'm going to, now I'm going to take a step back. Yeah. Actually, to be truthful, my son led the call and there were a few people that weren't acting, behaving as in the right way. For the school.
Yeah.
And so a parent wrote me and they said, hey, Jay, you know, I noticed a bunch of things. I think we should do more supervision. I think we should do this. I think we should do that. And I wrote back. I said, listen, this was the first attempt at this. Maybe next time what we'll do is instead of having everyone on the call, we'll have a topic. And maybe we'll have just a few people. And maybe we'll have rules of engagement that says who could talk when. And maybe we'll have a meeting leader. That's called governance. And that's really important.
And that's interesting from a work point of view as well, right? Because what most people always thought is that if you have someone work from home, how are you going to make sure they're working? What if they're slacking off, etc.? But I think most people, I think also because they don't have the option of leaving home, have been quite into it. And I think more into it and more productive than they would have been, let's say, if they weren't at home, maybe in the office, right? You don't have those moments where you can kind of go and just kind of blow steam off. You're literally at home all the time.
Yeah, there's no shortage of advice that people are giving. But at the end of the day, I agree. If you have a lot of work to do and you're a motivated person, you're going to be more productive in many ways. Just because I'd rather be more productive than sit at home. I'd rather be more productive than eat. I mean, everyone's going and eating so much right now.
Yeah.
This time is it's all about trust. And in general, I want to believe that the people in our society are going to do what's best.
Yeah.
But we're also seeing that there are plenty of players in there that are trying to take advantage of the situation. There's fraud. There's all these types of things. But if you're a good judge of character when you hire your team and you trust them, you're going to get more out of them.
Yeah.
It will feel better for everyone.
So I think we're going to take a lot of things that we've learned from this time. And I think those things are going to stay, right? I think a lot of people are going to turn around and say, maybe one day a week I can actually work from home. That 4-day work week, which people have spoken about for years, might actually happen. You never know.
You never know. As my own boss, if I feel like working at 8 o'clock at night, I do. I schedule around picking up my children or taking them to school. It works for me. And command and control doesn't seem to work for a lot of people. And this whole idea of showing up and clocking in and clocking out, that's why I'm not working in that way. Right now, I want to work for someone that I trust. I want to work for someone that trusts me. And there are many corporations that have embraced that and are doing great.
Also, kind of segueing a little bit. Let me understand how your company kind of works. I mean, you mentioned multiple paths to it. If you had to break that down, how what all does the collective involve?
Yeah, the collective involves. Three things. One is helping brands around telling their story and telling it in a meaningful way along the lines of all the things we talked about today.
Yeah.
The other part of the collective is I work with companies and I have a very strong relationship with a company called Rebel Mouse. And Rebel Mouse was started by Andrea Brianna, who was at Huffington Post as the CTO.
Yeah.
And it's a technology that enables people to create content that actually spreads without paid media based on the technology and the way it's built.
Yeah.
And I work to help people to sort of realize and I evangelize for Rebel Mouse. Okay. And the third part is the UX Bureau. And the UX Bureau is really at the center of everything we do. So whether it's me doing the consulting on brand and story or Rebel Mouse implementation or whatever our other partners, what we realized at UX Bureau is it's not about the outputs of the strategy. Let's call it the roadmap. Let's call it the prototypes, minimum viable product. Those are all important. But what the UX Bureau does best is going into large companies and helping them to get out of their own way.
Yeah.
So we take a look at all the siloed functions that have different marching orders and are sort of looking at things this way. And we start to ask questions. And when we ask those questions, sometimes what we find is that we'll say, what are the steps in the process to do this? Mm. And we'll ask six people that are in the process and all of them will have different answers.
Yeah.
And realize no one was incentivized to streamline that process. And that's streamlining
because you have almost blinders like of horses yeah. I've had, and then so that keeps you away from looking at the wider picture.
Yeah, exactly. So we realize that, and what we do is we break down barriers within companies because we. And this is something I've been struggling with for my whole, when I went to grad school, the first debate that we talked about was strategy and tactics. Yeah. And we asked the question, why can't there be an integrated digital marketing agency that does it all? And then you realize, well, that the corporations are organized in a way that wouldn't embrace that because there's the media department, there's the digital department, there's all these different things. And so what UX Bureau is trying to do is really to shift the way we think about things to think about the outcome and create a roadmap to deliver that outcome, but also not create the prototype and then leave. See it through in a way that allows it to be systematized and governed, and et cetera. So I'll just give you one example. Someone, let's hypothetically, is looking to invest in local storefronts. And those local storefronts need to be, they want to do this in multiple states or let's say around the world. And there needs to be a consistent look and feel and a sort of a reason for being and an understanding of the customer. That's the stuff that the collective does. Then the goal is to have it have e-commerce. But when you're buying up all these local stores, they all have different e-commerce systems. Mm-hmm. So how would those things come together to create an e-commerce system online, something for the employees to access, and something for in-store? That is a tremendous spider web that needs user experience design. And, and then there might be other ways to connect it all. But the vision is that we bring in the right experts to do an end-to-end digital transformation.
You also teach, and before we started recording, you mentioned this piece that which you call your core values, which kind of have driven both what you teach as well as how the collective works. I think it'd be interesting kind of to hear that part because I think that'll have a lot of value for a lot of people to kind of listen to.
Sure. Went to a workshop at Columbia University, and at that workshop, it was called Reverse Engineering Your Career from Your Core Values. And that day, it was a cold day in January, I came up with these values: curiosity, candor, and collaboration. And when I came up with those values, I realized that I wasn't receiving those values in my work. Mm-hmm. And I also wasn't receiving them at home. And I made some very dramatic choices. One was I decided to leave my marriage. And when I left my marriage, I decided that I had the brain power and capacity to fulfill my vision. And so I started calling people and I created the collective. And so it was funny. I went on an eat, pray, love vacation to Thailand after I was divorced. And while I was on that vacation, I was sitting on the beach and I got a LinkedIn request from Professor Jose Mendoza from Sacred Heart University. And he said, "Have you ever thought about teaching?" And I said, "Yes." And I thought about it on the beach while I was drinking a coconut. And I realized I can do this, and that decision has really made an impact in my career. And so I'll just tell you one quick story of a student. I have a student who was debating the course is called Developing Your Content Strategy Through Your Developing Your Personal Brand Through Content.
Yeah.
And I worked to create the course because I believe that students need to say something and stand for something at this critical time when they're looking to get a job. And so one student of mine, he was thinking about ideas and the ideas weren't coming to him. And then a week later, he comes in and he says to me, I thought of an idea. He said, my father started teaching at Columbine High School in 1999. And 1999 was the year of this shooting at this high school. Mm-hmm. And that shooting forever changed my father. And as a result of that shooting, he is now a subject matter expert in helping communities to persevere through adversity. And he goes around the country and sometimes the world to address this. And he said, would it be okay if I write about that? And then I said, would it be okay? It would be amazing. I mean, because that is a very much a part of your life. You were, you know, born and you went to school there. And it was very much a part of, like it or not, coronavirus is going to be a part of our lives. Yeah. That was a part of your life. So do it. Yeah. And the output that he wrote about was tremendous. It was personal. It was compelling. It was interesting. And it also added value. And he said to me, he said, I really don't see this as marketing because it's actually valuable. And I'm like, wow, that's so interesting that you think that marketing may not be valuable. But guess what? Marketing is shifting. And this is what we talked about in the beginning.
Yeah.
The shift that's happening is that people are looking for companies and individuals that stand for something and have empathy in this time of need. And who better to have empathy than someone who lived through it? And true. So, that student actually is going to be working with me on an independent study to take some of the ideas that he put forth in that original class and work on his capstone project.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here. We are all individuals. There's a reason why you're doing what you're doing right now. It's because after the recession, you decided to go off with your friend and start something.
Yeah.
You created something that you're very comfortable doing. I mean, this comes easy to you to have this conversation, but it doesn't come easy to everyone. And so in life, isn't it great to be able to sort of make those decisions and see where we're going to go with that vision? They say that if you don't have a vision, you can't measure who you are now and or where you're going.
Yeah.
So creating a core value exercise and sort of creating content and really laddering up to that's as they say at MasterCard, priceless.
Yeah. So vision and legacy, right, are the two things, and I think it goes for people and it goes for brands as well. Is that's what people will look at? Is saying that. It's not about what, I mean, there are momentary things which really help. You want a brand to give you a great offer, you want to get the right price, you want to get value for money and all that stuff. But eventually you stick to brands which kind of give you something over a lifetime, right? And or you're just going to be, flash in the pan in and out as you go.
That's right. And this is a perfect time if your company is not adding that value for you to swiftly reinvent yourself to be more relevant.
And
by the way, with regards to legacy, when we're talking about companies, when we're talking about individuals, I don't want my legacy to be I was a an employee. I wanted my legacy to be I created something that is meaningful. I want to be a good dad and I want to, make a difference and make an impact. And I just couldn't sit still. And if you think about a company and you think about the collection of all the people, what is it that you guys stand for and how, I'll put it to you. Like, is there a unique DNA of your agency that emerged from your leadership, but then took on a new life based on, all the different changes that have happened?
I think that honestly, what I've seen over the last couple of weeks has been the fact that our entire leadership kind of stood up and took responsibility. They each led the charge on multiple points. And while that's on one side, I think the other side, people have really started innovating. Like, because not innovating on just the fact that, okay, how do we make sure things sustain, which was not even innovation. Like, we had to make sure that things happen for all our clients. The other side was, okay, we can't do certain things. Like, we can't do shoots anymore. in any time soon, right? So and I oversee the production part of the business. So for me, a large part of what we do kind of just went away. But the entire team kind of sat back and said, okay, fine, we're all at home, but we all have, so they all ended up setting up mobile edit setups across editors' houses. We have like animators working around the clock. We're figuring ways for people to create stuff in their homes, parallelly talk to someone somewhere else. Can you direct someone sitting in their house over a Zoom call? You don't know, right? So they're experimenting. Yeah. And I think that's been the most exciting thing for me to see is that
people
are
really, that's exactly right. Yeah, and that's where the opportunity to be as relevant as possible is going to emerge. Like I've been taking the opportunity to do a lot of networking, and I'm talking to people that are that I'm meeting on LinkedIn around some of these ideas. And one of the people that I talked to yesterday said something really powerful, and I've heard this before. My old boss, Mel Clements at MasterCard, said this, and he said, "No is the most powerful word in the English language." And if you build your brand, in addition to knowing, by the way, her name is Rose, who said this, if you build your brand and you know what you stand for, but you also know what you won't do, where you won't compromise, you're going to be more powerful because then you can actually stand for something. So in this situation, a lot of people are going to ask you a lot of stuff, and a lot of people will try and pay you to do certain things. But the question becomes, if you say no and you have a good reason and you're a trusted advisor to this client and say, listen, I could produce this for you right now, but I would say we should wait. Or whatever. I don't know what the situation. This is all hypothetical. But it's as important to understand what you won't do as what you will do. That's called boundaries.
Yeah.
And boundaries keep you intact. And by necessity, they exclude the wants and needs of others.
If I was someone today who was, let's say, just going to finish college, and I knew what, and I'd spoken to people, I'd done my internships, and I knew what my job would involve, and then now Corona happens. And what my job will involve has dramatically changed, or has it? And that's the question I've been thinking about for a while now, actually.
If you want to be in a career that involves being on autopilot, what you're going to do is you're going to go on the job boards and blindly apply to any job, and then someone will hire you, and it may or may not be what you want. And you're going to go for it, and you're going to just let other people control your destiny. If you take the time, and by the way, this is something that I will offer anyone who listens to this podcast. If you want to speak to me and start to think about your core values and what you stand for, I can provide you resources to do that. But really, take a stand and say, listen, this is my life. And this is what I like to do, and this is what I stand for. And when you seek that out, like, I'm talking to you right now because I was curious.
Yeah.
And also because I was confident. I believed that in that I had something to say, and I just sought out this idea that I can spread this message, and that's great. But I think what I would say to students that are graduating is don't let someone else, or don't let the system control you. Think about what it is that makes you wake up in the morning and build your career and your life around it.
That's so true. But do you think they'll need different skill sets? Do you think the skill set requirement to work in marketing will change after this? Or do you think that's not really going to change?
I think that the skill set has been changing over the course of the last decade.
Yeah.
If you look at things like Canva, which is, the new generation is very sophisticated at creating professional videos and content, and like the things that children are able to do on TikTok. I look at TikTok and I'm addicted at times. It's a lot of fun, but the things that they do, like for example, when the person's wearing their pajamas and then all of a sudden like this, and then they're in this fancy outfit, it's very easy to do for that generation. It's much harder for me to do that. And that creativity, I think what they need to understand is, how do you channel that creativity to deliver scale and impact? Yeah. So, you know, if you deliver impact without scale, you're nothing. If you deliver scale without impact, you're nothing as well. So if you have this boring message and you get a lot of paid media, people aren't going to react well to it if it doesn't inspire them. And so what we're seeing is that people are going viral on TikTok, and they're figuring that out based on doing things that they know people are interested in seeing. And some of those things are really strange, like detailing a car, mm-hmm. or like, surprising someone, like under the counter and like taking their bottle away or whatever it is. Like, why is it that people like that stuff? Why is it that Charli D'Amelio, this girl from Connecticut, who does some little dances, has 30 million, followers? It's hard to explain, but the younger generation understands that more than we do. And so if you sort of, the thing that I would say is that, listen, don't get distracted by tactics.
Yeah.
You know, you have your skills and you have what comes to you naturally, but if you take that and then you apply it through the lens of like, who is our audience? Mm-hmm. What is our message? How are we going to deliver that message? And how are we going to measure the success of our initiative? That's what you need to learn by doing it, by following people like us that have done global campaigns for, you know, big companies, and understand what KPIs are and how you measure them. But gone are the days where you have these vanity KPIs like views. Like, who cares, you know?
I think this generation has this unique, position of having the best tools available to them, but they also are a generation who really care about empathy and purpose. And I think these things aren't they were catchphrases for a generation before them, but for them, these things really mean what they are. And that's what's important.
It's real, and purpose-driven is good. But what's even better is something that was created out of Harvard. I think it was Michael Porter that created this concept of creating shared value. Mm-hmm. And what is creating shared value? Creating shared value means that it's okay to profit and do well for the community at the same time. And so one thing that's important is to realize that it's great to go on a mission to save the whales.
Yeah.
But or whatever you're passionate about, but like, you have to deliver some value and some relevance to someone in order to get paid and to, live a lifestyle or whatever it may be. So marry what you're passionate about, but also understand that you're working in a system, and a system has certain conventions and processes and things that are valued, and that's how you get paid.
And where do you see content going from here?
I see, there was a colleague of mine, Andrew Bowens at MasterCard, that talked about content pollution. Mm-hmm. The world is filled with it. And my hope, but I don't believe that this will come through, but my hope is that people are able to think about content in a strategic way and just stop creating stuff that is going to pollute the internet. Like, and just create less, but make it more meaningful. And I don't see that going. I think that people need people like us.
Yeah.
Truly. Like, I think that a lot of people in this world think that they can create amazing content, and the work that we do is absolutely critical to really understand who the audience is and what they do and how they'll receive the content and how we'll measure the success what will stand out. So if I were to make a wish, my wish would be that people would call me up and call you up and say, listen, I have an idea. I started this great business. I'm looking to make a difference, and I want a strategic yet scalable plan that, yeah. That will drive success.
So towards the end of every podcast episode, right, I do this thing called the Humans of Advertising. It's more me asking slightly non-regular questions to all my guests, and also kind of so. What can you put together in an instant?
What can I put together in an instant?
Yeah.
It's certainly not Legos. I'm really bad at putting things together. But I could put together, let me look around here, my hands.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised no one said that in all the episodes that I've done. That is actually...
That's about all I can put together.
do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
I listen to a lot of TED Talks. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of NPR, which is the radio that's here, and a lot of the content on there, and the shows like All Things Considered and et cetera. I do a lot of Audible reading.
Yeah. Any suggestions you would have from an audiobook or a podcast?
Range is the latest book that I have been listening to, and that book talks about the fact that generalists in this world have gotten a bad rap, and that in many ways we're very too much specialized. So, for example, you can make a joke that I'm going to see a left ear specialist, and there might be a left ear specialist doctor, but when you think about the left ear, you might be missing out the fact that the left ear is connected to the nose and the right ear, and you might be missing out on the whole point. So it basically, tells stories of how you should think about your problem in a more general way. And yes, specialists can come in. Like, for example, user experience specialists can come in and implement the stuff. Yeah. But this goes to the whole reason why UX Bureau is, if we're thinking about it this way, it's that we've been there, we've done that, we have this experience, so let's take our generalist experience and let's embrace it, and then let's be strategic and specialize in how we do it.
So Range is the name of the book.
Yeah, I think his name is David Epstein, the author.
Okay.
And the other thing is Atomic Habits, which is really great. And Atomic Habits as a book, and he also has podcasts as well. And in that book, he talks about three circles. And at the circle, the center of the circle is identity. Mm-hmm. The next circle is process. And then the following circle is outcome. And what he suggests, which is very important for everything that we just discussed, is that if you start your thinking around identity of yourself or the person you're targeting, you're more likely to have a habit that sticks. So if I decided to be a vegetarian based on seeing Netflix and Game Changers, which is this very popular movie, and I say, you know what, I want to be healthier, I want to be happier, I want to be stronger, and I believe in what I'm seeing, that is connected to my identity. The next thing is process. Like, what is the thing that I'm going to do to maintain that? And then the outcome is losing weight. But if you did it the opposite way, it says my goal is to lose weight.
Yeah,
that's not a good way to lose weight.
And why will advertising not die?
Why will advertising not die? It's because we're very smart in this industry, and we have to keep on reinventing ourselves to be relevant. And I believe that the coronavirus is why it won't die, because we're going to come out of the coronavirus with a renewed energy to deliver relevancy and value, and people need that. And so, just like my student who said, you know, this doesn't feel like advertising or marketing, it is. And so advertising has to take on a new light and a new life. in order to continue to inspire people. And you know, increasingly people will see through the stuff that doesn't work. And if the stuff stops working, then people will have no choice but to do some of the things that you and I have been talking about for decades.
Thank you so much for doing this. This has been a lot of this. I think this has been one of those sessions which is just right for the time we're in right now and for the times to come. Thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And you know, look forward to you know, staying in touch and you know, seeing where this all goes.
For sure. And that's it for this episode of Advertising is Dead.